You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. Throughout the show, we've been talking about leaps, both small ones and big ones. Now, let's get global. Last year, the world experienced a significant jump, a rise in global temperature. Turns out, 2014 was the hottest year on record. And just this week, a group of scientists moved the hands on the doomsday clock, that's when mankind wipes out our own existence at midnight, to 11:57 p.m. That's the closest the clock has been to midnight since the height of the Cold War. And one of the reasons the scientists cited is climate change. But it's hard to get people to act differently, especially when the consequences for inaction can seem so far off in the future. Ann Carlson is the co-director of the Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at UCLA Law. And I asked her how to make people actually change their behavior.
So one of the things I think we really need when you want to talk about leaps are big leaps in innovative technology that can produce energy without the consequent greenhouse gas emissions.
How do you get different actors to do that? I mean, where does the incentive come from? Where does the money come from?
Well, the incentive, I think, comes from pricing. So either through a tax or through a cap and trade system that says to emitters, you can't emit unless you pay a price for those emissions. And then the money comes from entrepreneurs, innovators who figure out how to develop energy that doesn't emit as many emissions or that captures those emissions. So one of the things we're seeing in areas of the country where we've been pretty aggressive on trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions is actually the creation of a lot of jobs in industries that are producing clean energy.
Can you give me some examples?
Yeah, so a big example is solar. So there are a lot of incentives around the country to require utilities to generate a lot of their electricity or to buy the generation of electricity from clean sources like solar and wind. Solar is now starting to be competitive with more traditional carbon-intensive fuels like coal and natural gas. We're now seeing more jobs in the solar industry than we are in the coal industry.
There's this sort of dichotomy between what the government has pushed for and can agree on, certainly cap and trade has gone nowhere on Capitol Hill, versus what private businesses are doing. Who is funding these changes now?
Well, the funding is coming from a couple different sources. One thing that's spurring private businesses is actually regulation in places like California. The Department of Energy, through the stimulus bill in 2008, actually funded quite a bit of research and provided loans. You may remember the Solyndra fiasco, right? Now, so it turns out that the government lost money on Solyndra but made a lot of money on a lot of other green technology investments. So there have been a number of sources. Then in addition, there have been these regulatory requirements, which are not direct money but are mandates that say to a company, for example, an auto company, you need to meet a certain standard for your cars or you can't sell them or you're going to get fined. And so there have been a bunch of different mechanisms. Then there have also been other countries around the world that have been very aggressive in promoting green energy. The European Union, and particularly Germany, has been really, really aggressive in trying to get its economy moving toward a very, very carbon-neutral economy using a lot of wind and solar, and their usage has driven prices down. So, again, made some of this green energy cheaper and more competitive with traditional sources like coal and natural gas.
You know, I think about the way we talk about these issues, and I'm holding part of the report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and I just want to read part of it to you. It says, continued emission of greenhouse gases will cause further warming and long-lasting changes in all components of the climate system, increasing the likelihood of severe, pervasive, and irreversible impacts for people and ecosystems. That seems pretty clear, even for a bunch of scientists. So I guess I wonder, what's the gap between hearing that and how do you leap to, you know, I might need to actually change the stuff I'm doing?
Well, I think, again, there are a couple of gaps. One is that it really is a global problem. And it's really easy to say, well, the U.S. isn't going to act too aggressively unless we see China acting aggressively. And China may say, well, we're really not going to do anything because it's the United States that emitted and Europe. And so it's very easy to kind of shift responsibility from one country to another and not actually take action. I think another reason is, again, because most of the gain that we get from reducing carbon emissions today will benefit future generations. That it won't necessarily benefit us immediately. And it's really hard for politicians to take steps that impose current pain in order to provide future benefits. And so the really lengthy nature of this problem contributes to, I think, political inertia.
It also seems like it contributes to personal inertia. Like everybody thinks, well, there's just not that much I can do.
Both of those things are true. You change your behavior and you don't actually see immediate results. With climate change, you stop using as much energy and all you notice is that you're not using as much energy. You don't see temperatures drop, right? You don't see immediate effects of something like cleaner air. And that's true for politicians too. So even if you reduce the emissions, you might see some gains in job growth in green tech industries, but you don't see an immediate effect in reducing the environmental problem. Frankly, I am not a believer that we can just call on people's goodwill to engage in behavioral change in a way to solve the problem. I think we need regulatory policy that incentivizes people to change their behavior. And probably the best way to do that is by, again, making people pay for the social costs of burning fuel that puts carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. I'm a believer that price can do a lot. I think the best example of that is see what happens when gasoline prices go up. When gasoline prices go up, people buy smaller cars, they drive less, they carpool more, they change their behavior, not because they're trying to save the environment, because they're trying to save some money.
Ann Carlson is the Shapiro Professor of Environmental Law and the Faculty Director of the Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at the UCLA School of Law. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.